Reed Martin and I are sitting here with noted author, former clown, David Carlyon, who is the author of this fantastic-looking book, Dan Rice, The Most Famous Man You've Never Heard Of. And I have to say, that there is truth in advertising right there in that title. Who is Dan Rice? What would be his contemporary equivalent? Who would he be today?
His contemporary equivalent in terms of fame would be movie stars.
Okay.
His contemporary equivalent in terms of his approach would be Jon Stewart.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 385, Unknown Dan Rice. This Thursday night, April 24th, 2014, we begin our four-week run of the complete history of comedy abridged at the Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. One of the famous comedians and clowns who we do not mention in the show is the 19th century Jon Stewart, Dan Rice. Fortunately, the definitive biography of Dan Rice has been written by David Carlyon, who sat down with me and Reed Martin to talk about the performances and politics of the 19th century.
See, he was a circus clown in an era when there were knockabout clowns, did the physical stuff, and then there were talking clowns. Most of the talking clowns did standard verbal routines, back chat with the ringmaster. Dan Rice expanded into politics. At first, it was his hits on the Times, they called them.
Hits on the Times, that's a great...
Hits on the Times. So his hits on the Times would expand into politics until eventually it made his name. He was terribly quick-witted.
We were performing in Pittsburgh 9 or 10 years ago, and I went into Barnes & Noble, and I see this book about Dan Rice.
The one we're talking about.
The one we're talking about. And I bought it, and I read it, and I didn't realize you were a former Ringling Clown College graduate and a circus clown with Ringling. So I read it. What I knew about Dan Rice was that he was supposedly the model for Uncle Sam. Is that true?
The Uncle Sam story is pretty darn close to accurate. And I'm a historian, so I have to be cautious here. The Uncle Sam figure we know now was drawn by Thomas Nast after the Civil War. In 1860, if you had drawn a top hat and chin whiskers on an otherwise featureless face, everybody in the country would have known, Dan Rice.
Wow.
He was that well known. So you've got the top hat, you've got the chin whiskers, you've got this tailcoat and fancy pants, but also in Stars and Stripes. Also, if you think about it, parenthetically, Uncle Sam is a weird icon for the United States, because the United States sees itself as, we're just folks.
Right.
We're not fancy pants.
Right.
But the Uncle Sam costume is a diplomat's costume. It's
a bit of a dandy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody's ever commented on that, but...
You did.
All of Dan Rice's, the physical elements that he was known for, coalesced in Uncle Sam. So, no, he was not model for Uncle Sam in the sense that he stood and posed for Thomas Nast. Thomas Nast didn't have him in mind. On the other hand, Dan Rice was in the atmosphere in the same way that if you make an American Idol joke, even if you don't watch the show, everybody's got a rough idea what's going on there, and so the joke plays.
It was a visual mashup. They took. So what? So all right. So he's the equivalent, a 19th century equivalent of a movie star.
Right.
He is a huge performer, incredibly famous, a politician.
Yeah, and making the equivalent of would now be $20,000 a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So why have we never heard of him? Why don't we know more about him today?
He's not famous because the kind of clowning he did, not just the verbal wit, because that continues every age, but a direct engagement of the audience dealing with politics was a hit in the mid-19th century. Before the Civil War, performance of all kinds was very participatory. Theater historians like to talk about the rubes who didn't understand they were at play, or about crude audiences that were rowdy and didn't get the good stuff the way us smart people do. I think that's a slur of 19th century audiences and a misunderstanding of the evidence.
Okay.
That is, it was a participatory time in performance and politics, with a huge overlap in performance and politics. People went to hear political speeches because they liked it, and they'd yell at it. You'd go to the theater.
It was entertainment, yeah.
It was entertainment. Yeah. You'd go to the theater. If somebody was overacting, you had absolutely no compunction about yelling at them. If they were saying something you didn't like, either an improvisation the actor did or the lines, they would say something. They would get up and yell. It was, and as a matter of fact, there were fights about defending their right to participate. It was a very different and a very vibrant time, and I don't think you can understand 19th century politics before the Civil War if you don't understand that about performance.
Well, and I think you talk about in the book that there wasn't maybe such a separation between what we would say high art and low art, that it was all one. Am I remembering that correctly?
Absolutely. Actually, the whole notion of high and low is a 19th century invention to fit the growing middle class. Before, audiences were mixed and forms were mixed.
Yeah.
For instance, concerts were popular entertainment. Shakespeare was popular entertainment, but popular in our, not in our sense where it's, oh, it's something that is kind of for those people. It was popular in the sense that everybody went to it and got different things out of it. Dan Rice's direct engagement of audiences was, by definition, a kind of crudeness. Theater became seen as something that was like piece of art on a museum wall, was something behind a proscenium arch where the audience sat in the dark and appreciated. That became the audience's job, to appreciate, not to participate.
Now, you're a Renaissance man. You went to the University of Michigan. You went to law school at Bolt at Cal Berkeley. You served in the armed forces. Then you went off to Clown College. How did it come that you had an interest in Dan Rice and enough to write a book, and then how did you get it published?
Yeah.
It's possible when I was in Clown College, I heard about Dan Rice, but I don't remember it.
Yeah.
So I hadn't heard of him.
Yeah.
After the circus and before grad school, I was doing Riverside Shakespeare, touring New York City parks, and a friend of mine in the show told me about this guy he had heard about who'd been a clown like me and was best friends with Abraham Lincoln. And even though the way I got to know him was totally fiction,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's still a common fiction. If you Google it, you're going to see lots of that.
Right.
Still, I was hooked.
Mm-hmm.
And then in grad school, I had to pick a topic, and I thought, oh, this looks interesting. So I thought I was going to do this kind of celebration of this circus clown in the way I thought of circus clowns, 20th century clowns. And instead, I got into 19th century performance and politics. And before you knew it, I was hooked. By the time I found out that most of those things were fictions,
mm-hmm.
or flat-out lies, I was hooked. So my book is really a cultural history of the mid-19th century overlaid on this story of this fascinating person.
And this is in the context, his show is in the context of some many things we would recognize of a circus, or what we would think of a circus in those days. It's under a tent. He was known for training, I believe, pigs and dogs and horses and elephants and hippos and camels. What other sorts of things besides him talking in the ring would be happening at a Dan Rice show?
Well, the circus, that's part of the reason that Dan Rice's unusual career really never connected also, because the circus elements seem to be the same, and in many ways are the same since the first circuses in the late 18th century. So we had the animals, had acrobatics, lots of acrobatics, which eventually went up high. Pretty women. He advertised a spectacle of the magic ring before Wagner, in which he had 100
Johnny Cash,
100 ballet girls. No, he had ballet girls and 100 court auxiliary. No, so at the National Theater in Philadelphia. So had showgirls, had skill acts, had animals, exotic animals, and that horse animal stuff, and the clown, talking clowns. So those
fun elements, for the whole family.
Right. So that element persisted. Funny you should say fun for the whole family. The circus was primarily an adult institution for most of its first century. It really wasn't, I mean, children would go occasionally, but in the same way that they might sneak into an R-rated movie. Or when a show came to a small town, everybody went, and that would include children. But it was really an adult institution, full of sex, violence, and politics.
Hi, I'm Ron West. I'm the co-author of The People vs. Friar Lawrence, The Man Who Killed Romeo and Juliet, and you are listening to the Reduced Shakespeare podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? This week we begin our month-long run of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged at Merrimack Repertory Theater in Lowell, Massachusetts. And next week our British and Irish tour of The Bible, The Complete Word of God Abridged, resumes with performances in Derry, Londonderry, Drogheda, Cork, Newry, Waterford, Galway, and Monaghan. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader or email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to our conversation with David Carlyon about 19th century comedian, clown, politician, and wit, Dan Rice, the most famous man you've never heard of.
Now, did he have any relationship with P.T. Barnum? Because when I think of him heading up this show and marketing, did they know each other? Did they have an opinion about each other? Or were they not contemporaries?
They had they went head-to-head in New Orleans, and some of the local paper, when P.T. Barnum brought Jenny Lind to New Orleans. Huge hit throughout the country, wherever she went. But local papers said Dan Rice did a better job than Barnum. The interesting thing about Barnum is he really wasn't a circus guy. No. He is now synonymous with circus. Right. Barnum, circus, circus, Barnum. The only names that come close, really, are the Ringling Boys. Some of us think that he really was never a circus guy, except he was the master of promotion, and that's half of circus.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Getting the butts in the seats.
He sort of falls into the stereotypes, doesn't he, of hard drinking, brawling, yeah. Would just run through money like water through a sieve? Are all those accurate?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. He was a drunk. When he was lecturing, the story went that he was lecturing on temperance and had gin in his supposed water pitcher. I doubt that's true. It's a nice story.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Dan Rice, like Abraham Lincoln and Mark Twain, attract stories. If there's some really cool quotation, it's usually going to be attributed to Abraham Lincoln or Mark Twain, even if they didn't say it. Dan Rice is the same way.
Show me the money is my favorite Dan Rice quote.
Now, I think I read that Walt Whitman reviewed Dan Rice's show. Is that true? And what did he think?
Walt Whitman saw the show in Brooklyn wrote in 1856, reviewed the show. Walt Whitman was especially fond of the energetic bodies of the male acrobats and said that it would not hurt a young boy to go see that kind of exemplary action.
Oh, a captain, my captain.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your claims to non-fame via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, least famous man you hear of every week, Matthew Croke, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to David Murray. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Ron West, co-author and director of The Trial of Friar Lawrence, The Man Who Killed Romeo and Juliet. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 385 1155th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
Now I actually think you're going to have to change the title of your book to Dan Rice, the most famous man we've now heard of.
This podcast is a production of the Reduce Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.